Main speaker, Myers R. Dallas, Texas. Come on down.
I'm so impressed with this group. It is just the coolest. My name is Myers Raymer, and I'm an alcoholic. And I took my last nasty drink on January 15th, 88, and it is a pleasure to be here. My home group is a primary purpose group in Dallas, Texas. A bunch of big old big book guys, and I'm always surprised and a little bit caught off guard when I walk into a group like this and I got a bunch of big book guys in here. Lately, I'm batting about 1,000 here, where I go into groups and nobody's got a big book, nobody knows what a big book is, nobody gives a rat's patootie what a big book is, and it just gets fairly painful trying to talk about the big book when nobody knows really or really cares what you're doing. Some of you guys heard my twin brother 5-6 weeks ago, the evil twin Chris, and he's back here tonight too. We just happened coincidentally to be here at the same time. We didn't. We came together, but I'm here with my wife and our families. And Bob just said, "Well, since you're here," and so that's kind of how we worked that out. And then he gets out of the country, the jerk. Please, you make sure you tell him it's the best AA talk you ever heard, and we'll kind of rub it in that he missed it. He managed to get as far away from me as he could. I was thinking a minute ago. Somebody said, "Chris is a." We did a talk in Phoenix one time together, and this guy said, "Well, we're going to bill this as the good seed, bad seed tour." And I laughed about it. And then after the talk, he came up and he said, "We're having a little trouble figuring out which one of you guys is the good seed," because it was like both of us are a little bit out there sometimes. I'll be brief, I promise. I'm a third generation drunk, and you would think with crazy guys like my grandfather and my father and then Chris ahead of me, Chris was always my guy that I always said, and you got him in your life too, if I get as bad as him, I'll stop. We all have guys like that. And Chris lived with me and he worked with me, and it was just, you can imagine what our household was like, having two active alcoholics living in this house. We've got my daughter that's 4 years old and my wife who's trying to figure out what the heck is going on, where the money's going, why I can't work past 2 o'clock in the afternoon, this kind of stuff. My wife is also my business partner in our business, and it's just bizarre. I wish I could tell you a bunch of fancy stories about being drunk, but you know, I'm probably the most pathetic drunk you ever met. Alcohol took me to places that I didn't want to go and made me do all kinds of bizarre things, and I became the kind of man that I detested the most, which was a coward and a bully. And let me get all juiced up on booze, and I get real brave, and I get real lippy, and I get real, you know the drill. And it's not pleasant. You think I'm loud sober, you should have seen me drunk. And there was also this one little problem about if we were someplace and you had a date, somewhere in there I had to put my hand on your date. It was just, you met guys like that? I mean, it's just not very pleasant. And my wife is sitting there trying to figure out what in the heck's going on, and it's just, it seems like the drunker I get, the angrier I get, and the more I want to make sure that you see things my way. And it doesn't make any difference where we are. We could be in the grocery store, or we could be in the... It doesn't make any difference. In the last 2 months that I drank, I got beat up in a liquor store for trying to beat up a liquor store clerk, and I got beat up in a pizza place for trying to beat up a pizza guy, and you get the picture. It's just, I'm the scrawniest guy in the room, and yet I'm the angriest at the whole deal. And I'm not sure that I stopped drinking because I wanted to stop drinking. I think I stopped drinking because I got tired of being beat up. I got tired of living my whole life in my garage, which is where I was. It's amazing how our world gets real, real small as we get drunker and drunker. You know, the world's out there and it's so cool, and all of a sudden, my world consists of my kitchen and my garage. And that's it, you know. I've got this duck boat project, you know, I'm redoing this boat to go murder some duck. And so for years I worked on that stupid duck boat. I never finished it and I never took it out on the lake. It was just a place to hide booze, really, and sit out there and just get squashed. And that was the nature of it. Chris sobered up in January of 88 and, that could have been real good. Chris sobered up in January of 88 and November of 87. And so I had 2 months of watching him live his life. And it was an amazing thing to see. They talk about AA being a program of attraction rather than promotion, and it was. Watching Chris change right in front of me. and I'm making his life hell, and I'm making fun of his big book, and I'm making fun of his meetings, and I'm making fun of this whole, I mean, here's my best drinking buddy, and he's gone, and now I'm having to deal with that, and it's just a weird deal. Deep inside, I know I'm done. I know I'm toast. I know that things are not going to get any better than they already are. I'm almost unemployable. If it wasn't for my wife holding our business together, it would have been long gone. I'm simply not capable. In the last couple of months that I drank, I left our biggest single customer. We didn't have too many anyway. I left our biggest single customer sitting at my desk because I was getting thirsty. And so I walked outside and felt around underneath the seat of my old Toyota Land Cruiser. It's in the middle of the summer. It's hotter than hell in Texas. There's no beer. So I swing up in the cab of that Land Cruiser and drive 6 miles to Lake Dallas to buy some beer. And come back, and this guy's gone, and my wife's crying, and she's going, I don't understand. And I'm going, you know, I don't understand either. I don't understand. Why would I do that? You see? This crazy stuff. Chris takes me to my first AA meeting, and I walk in, and I'm one of these guys that fell in love with AA from the first thing. I've got one sobriety date, January 15th, 88. I walked in, and I absolutely fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous and the people in these rooms. It was the coolest thing in the world to be in a room where people knew and understand what was going on. And we could talk our stuff, and we could, you know, you guys, there's nobody in here that doesn't understand exactly what I'm talking about. To finally be among people that understand. Here's where the rub comes in. I want you to fast forward 3 years. And in that length of time, I'm hearing the same stories from the same men, sharing the same war stories. I have a sponsor that I don't use. I have a big book that I don't read. And we have a group that doesn't do anything except talk. We have 21 meetings a week, and they're all discussion meetings. It is an absolute cesspool of ideas and opinions guaranteed to convey fun times, but very little else. I am proof positive. I am the poster boy of middle-of-the-road solution, and I'm proof positive that you can come and hang and just go to a bunch of meetings, and you can stay clear of the booze, maybe. The trick is that when we're looking at emotional sobriety and we're trying to figure out how can I get this emotional sobriety that keeps me happy inside? You see, the largest single group of people today killing themselves are people in 12-step recovery programs. Why is that? Because just being clear of the booze or just being clear of that drug is not enough. It's not enough. And yet that's what we sell in AA in a lot of places. You guys are really fortunate here. I've talked to a lot of guys, and a lot of what I'm talking about right now will not apply to you. You didn't come through the same thing. Remember, this is my experience, and it was fairly brutal. We had a group conscience meeting one night, and we decided that perhaps it was mentioned that perhaps we were talking about God too much in the meeting, and we were going to scare the newcomer off. And so perhaps we ought not to do that. And I was there, guys, I'm telling you. And I voted with everybody else. I just looked around the room, and all the hands were up, and I said, okay, I'll vote too. And we voted God out of that AA group. You could talk to him on a one-on-one basis if you were talking to a guy, but during our meeting, we don't talk about that stuff. But why would we want to talk about God anyway? Because all we're talking about is Sally Sue's divorce and Jim's inability to get a job and blah, blah, blah. You know the drill. It's just a place to come and share and dump. Did it feel good? Yes. Was it beneficial? No. Did any of those people mean me malice or harm? Of course not. These are men and women that loved me to death. And today I still love them. But buddy, let me tell you something. Somebody told me one time, said, Myers, you know what? If there's a circle and triangle on the door, God's there. I got news for you. I have to disagree. I think some of our meetings, in Iceland they call them dark tunnel meetings. And I know why. And some of our meetings have gotten so bizarre that we can't get sober. That nobody stays sober. And the ones that do are just, they probably weren't drunks in the first place. They were probably just heavy drinkers in the room. That's a personal opinion. But that was my experience at this thing. Now, I want you to understand this situation. At 7 years sober, I've not had a drink or done any of those outside issues. And I am absolutely, I'm crazier than a crap house rat. I'm telling you guys, I cannot tell you how bizarre my life was. I'm writing hot checks all over Denton County. Work is just like, I will get to it when we get to it. I can't keep my hands off other women. I'm doing everything I was doing when I was out there doing all that other stuff, except I'm not doing anything. I'm not drinking. I would later learn to come to find out I'd make that realization that the booze was effectively treating my alcoholism just fine. I was better off drunk than I was sober. Sober, I'm gradually, the mental obsession and the spiritual malady is gradually choking me to death. And I'm getting so sick that I cannot see straight. I cannot. The unfortunate part about that is that everybody in my group is the same way. The whole group was getting sick, and it was not a pretty thing to see. There's something about this Vegas thing. My lips are just about as dry as they can be. I don't know what this is. I've never taken a drink from a podium, and I would die if that wasn't here right now. It's amazing. How do you guys do this? Probably keep guys like me shut up. I got to tell you, when I got off the plane this afternoon, I was a spiritual giant. I was. And I walked into that casino and dropped $150 in about 20 minutes. And I was thinking, driving over here, I hate all you and I hope you all die tonight. I just... I was so sick when I walked in here. I was going, oh my gosh, I don't see how people live here and do that. It just drives me to distraction. Anyway, I want you to picture this situation. I finally almost drink. It scares me so bad, I call Chris. Now, Chris is by now has gotten married, moved to the Hill Country. He's got a big book sponsor, and he's doing the deal. Chris has been telling me for years, get out of the group. Why would I do that? We have this allegiance where we sobered up, and some of you guys understand that. We stay way past our usefulness, okay? No matter what happens, they could be killing cats in the back room, and we're still going to stay there doing this stuff. It didn't make any difference. So anyway, he says, don't do anything. In a couple of weeks, I'll be in Dallas. A couple of days, I'll be in Dallas to do a talk, and I'm going to go to a couple of groups, and we'll see if we can't find you another group to go to. Sure enough, true to his word, a couple of days later, he gives me a telephone number of this guy, and he says, go see this guy. He's a crusty old dude, but he'll help you. Chris, I'm real busy. I got a lot of stuff going on right now, and Chris is going, I don't get this. You called me a couple of days ago, tell me you're going to kill yourself, and you won't go see this guy. Arrogance? Yes. Stupidity? Yes. I have a double dose of it. I admit it. And so here we are faced with this dilemma. Drunk, I never ever thought about killing myself. All those years I drank and did that stuff. Sober, it's all I can think about. All I can think about. So I go see this guy. And this crusty old guy, some of you guys have heard me talk before, and I open the door, and there's this old guy, he's like a million years old, standing there, and he looks at me, and he says, where's your big book? And I said, hi, I'm Myers Raymer. I don't know where my big book is. I haven't seen it in years. And he said, here's mine. Don't ever come back over here without a big book. No, I'm glad to meet you. Welcome. Have a nice day. No, don't come back without it. Yes, sir. And my mind is going off like 100 miles an hour. I'm ricocheting off my head thinking, I can get out of here. I can be in that truck. I can be down this road before this old guy even gets out of his... I'm out of here. But there's another part of me saying, wait a minute, this old guy may have what I need. There's something about him that's different from these other guys. And in 45 minutes, this guy sits in this room and he shows me some stuff in the big book. And I'm telling you guys, in 45 minutes, I was convinced beyond a shadow of a doubt that this man already loved me enough. He knew me 45 minutes, and he already loved me enough to tell me the truth. And the truth was, shut the up. Don't say anything, because you simply don't know what you're talking about. And he'd tell me something, I'd say, well, you know, and I'd want to debate him. And I'd want to tell him all these little chicken shit one-liners I had. I just want to fill him full of all of this knowledge that I've gained in 7 years of sobriety, sitting in 21 discussion meetings a week. Buddy, he said, stop. Let me ask you a couple of questions. Simple questions. Just bear with me. I said, okay, fine. And so he takes me to the big book and he starts asking me questions. And after like the 10th one that I don't know, he says, Myers, you don't really know much about the big book, do you? No, I guess I don't. You see, because I don't understand that the big book is the key. I don't understand that the steps are the key. I don't understand that the spiritual experience is the key. But I can't get there because I'm too arrogant. I'm too self-centered and too sold on the idea that the fellowship is all there is to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I think a lot of drunks do that. I do. I'm not judging AA. I'm just telling you the truth. I think a lot of us get hooked up in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and forget that there's a program of Alcoholics Anonymous guaranteed to get us to a place that you will never believe, ever, that you can walk free and clear of this deadly disease if you'll simply do the work. And yet we're too busy trying to be a meeting maker and trying to dodge the responsibility of helping another drunk that we miss the greatest gift that God ever gave us. It's an amazing thing to see. I don't mean to make any of you feel uncomfortable. It's not my choice. It's not my deal. God didn't tap me on the shoulder this morning and say, Myers, I want you to go out to Las Vegas and straighten them bastards out. Trust me, he didn't say that. And there's much I don't know. The cool part about the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and our fellowship is that there is so much to learn that after 18 years of studying the Big Book, and that's all we do at our group, three meetings a week, and they're all Big Book studies, after all those years of doing that, there's still tons of stuff that I don't know. My sponsor's 83 years old, and he sits right next to me every Tuesday night, and we go through this thing. There'll be 160 people in this Big Book study. We'll be studying this deal, and I'll hear him go, "Well, I'll be damned. Cliff, what is it? I'll tell you after the meeting." And he does. And he goes, "Did you see this?" Every time we go through the book, it takes us 19 months to go through the book, start to finish, plus Dr. Bob's story, plus the traditions. And then we just start back over again. We do the same thing on Thursday night at a different place in the book. We do a step study on Saturday night. That's it. If you want a discussion meeting, go to a discussion meeting. Dallas has got 1,500 and something of them a week. I am perplexed always. Over the last couple of years, we've been doing a lot of work in Europe, trying to set up Big Book study groups, and some of this sprang up out of a website that we started that's got a bunch of support stuff on it. And part of it had to do with a lot of talks that Chris did, and then I got involved and I did some, and it was just kind of a weird deal. And we never dreamed what would really happen. But the result there, we got thousands of these guys in Denmark and England and Iceland, specifically those three places, that are walking lockstep through the book again and learning this thing that you wouldn't believe. And it's an amazing thing. Guys, I want to make sure you understand, our goal in any of this stuff is not to raise up a bunch of zealots. Is there anything any more offensive than a Big Book guy that comes in and wants to beat somebody up in a meeting with a Big Book? Is there anything any more offensive than somebody that gets self-righteous about the Big Book? Sure. Most of us have been there at one time or another. If you're a Big Book guy, we all kind of go through that little phase, but eventually we snap out of it and we go, wait a minute, what are we doing? But the reality is, I mean, nobody wants to see a bunch of zealots doing goofy things. But by the same token, why is it that we have to walk so far to the other way that we're afraid to embrace what is right? Somebody said one time, I said, Myers, it sounds like you're taking AA's inventory. I am. And I suggest that everybody in here do the exact same thing. You know, I'm not here to try to crucify it. I'm here to try to get people to start asking questions, just like I had to ask questions sitting in Cliff Bishop's room that day, sitting there and going, dang. See, I thought I knew this, and I didn't. What I knew was a bunch of opinion that had been spoon-fed me in AA by a bunch of well-meaning people who loved me to death. But I'm too lazy as an individual to pick the Big Book up and read it. It's my responsibility, not my group's. I resented those guys for years. Why? That's stupid. It's my responsibility to pick up the book and learn what's in there. It's my responsibility to find some Big Book guys that'll show me and help me. People who had recovered. People who had some knowledge about the book. Some of you young cats in here, man, I'm telling you, you'll gravitate to, some of you will do just what I did. You'll take the easier, softer route, and you'll gravitate to the first discussion meeting where they'll let you pontificate and share your lame, pathetic day, just like they did me. Stop it and don't do it. You need a place to share? You do. Guys, if I say anything that's controversial, it's this. I tell you, I think the open discussion meeting is the worst thing that ever happened to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I think that this crap of dumping stuff in meetings at the expense of the newcomer is ludicrous. I think you have a place to do that. It's called a sponsor. Do it. Get one. Go good. Do I think that there's a place that you can go to dump stuff? Yeah, like a beginner's meeting or someplace where you can go and share. Please do that. I encourage you to do that. But if you're going to six meetings a week, guys, and they're all discussion meetings, don't do that. Don't learn what's in the book. Try to get some discussions, some Big Book stuff in there and see what happens. Watch what happens to the quality of what you share in the discussion meeting. Now, instead of sharing chicken shit one-liners, you're sharing good, solid Big Book stuff guaranteed to help, you see? Look at this real quick. You guys don't get grindy on me, honest. That's the worst of it right there. We're all on the downhill slide right now. Look at the... Remember, this is my experience, not your experience. Next week, you can get up here and dispute everything I said. In the foreword of the first edition, we of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. Dig? At some point in time in here, we've got to come to the decision. If the book told us in the beginning of chapter 2 that our common solution was what was going to hold us together, not our common problem, our common solution, then what we have to do is come up and figure out what our common solution is. And it's tough to do in some of our meetings when Joe's sharing one solution, Bob's sharing another solution, and Sally's sharing another solution. We see that, don't we? A lot of times we see that same kind of stuff. Nobody means anything about it. It's just not very effective. The new guy, no wonder the new guys are befuddled and uncomfortable about doing 12-step work, about getting out and sharing, about getting out and sponsoring somebody, because they don't really understand. It wasn't that I didn't want to help somebody at 7 years sober. I just didn't know what was in the book. I just didn't know what to do. So when I'm in a meeting and this guy's looking at me, I'm going, oh, please, don't look at me. And after the meeting, I'm just figuring out a way to get out, because I don't want you to ask me to sponsor you. That's why I didn't sponsor anybody for all those years. I was proactive at getting you not to ask me, because I don't really want you there. I really don't want to share anything, because I'm really uncertain. At the core of my being, I think that I understand a little bit about the big book in recovery. The reality is, deep in that dark part of the night when you're laying in your bunk, I didn't know anything that was part of our common solution. I knew a lot of things to help you have a better day, but I didn't know anything that would help you with the other part. And there's the risky part. Guys, you're fortunate to be here. There's in Dallas, Texas tonight, I can name you three groups that I know of in Dallas, Texas, where they'll ask you not to bring your big book into a meeting. Don't even bring it. Don't even, if you walk out of your car with it, they'll ask you to turn around and go put it back in your car. They don't want them in the meeting. I can name you two groups in North Texas that are charging money to hear Fifth Steps. Don't tell me AA's okay. I'm telling you guys, there are some places where it's an absolute cesspool. I did a talk out in East Texas a couple of weeks ago, and guys, let me tell you, I always get there earlier. So I walk in, it's like 30 minutes before this meeting, I walk in, not a soul is saying anything. I sat down, nobody said anything, and I sat there. And I sat there, and I sat there. 8 o'clock comes, I'm sitting there still. Nobody said a word. It's like Twilight Zone stuff here, guys. There's no laughing, there's no joking, there's no, hey, how was your day? There's no work with proteges. There's nothing but men and women sitting in a meeting staring at each other. It is downright spooky. 5 minutes after 8, some guy finally gets up on the podium and says, well, we were supposed to have a speaker tonight. And I said, that's me. He goes, okay. And just walks off the podium. I'd been sitting there for about 30 minutes trying to figure out what I was going to talk about. It was a freaking bloodbath. It was just... It was a bloodbath. I just, such huge violations of the tradition, such huge, I want to tell you a quick story. In about, 4 or 5 years ago, my sponsor was going through a closet and found an intergroup calendar that had all the meetings in the Dallas-Fort Worth area in 1984. And this is probably 2000, 2001 when this happened. So we're talking about, 18, 19 years. And he thought it would be fun to take this meeting guide out and look at it and see how many groups were there now and how many groups were there today. I mean, in 84, and how many of them were today. Almost 50% of the groups that were there in 84 were no longer there in 2001. Almost 50%. There's 105 or 110, something like that, groups in the Dallas-Fort Worth area right now. Groups. Now, let me ask you a question. I'll hand it to you that there may have been some of those groups that decided that they didn't want to be a group anymore and they went away. But 50%? That's 50 groups that just went by the wayside. And you got to ask yourself the question, why? You got to. If you're a responsible member of Alcoholics Anonymous, you got to ask why these guys lost it, why it all went south. And I'll tell you why. Why I think, anyway, based on what I've been able to see, lack of adherence to the traditions is one. and lack of adherence to the big book and the steps is the sole means of our recovery. It'll blow you away when you see, I'm fortunate to sponsor a whole bunch of guys. 90% of the men I sponsor today are retreads from other groups. They're guys that have just been brutalized in AA, and they come over. And the very first question I always ask them is, tell me what you know about the big book. Where would I get that novel idea? That's exactly what Cliff Bishop was asking me in his room. What do you know about the big book? Oh my gosh. I sponsor three men that are over 30 years sober, and I'm telling you what, guys, there's a man or two in here that have been sober a week that know more than those guys do. They simply do not know anything about a program of recovery. They don't. And it's no wonder that they get in so much trouble. It's no wonder that their lives get in shambles. I was convinced, Scout's Honor, I was convinced that AA was a process group and we process stuff and that's how we stayed sober. It's just a big support group, that there was no program. I didn't believe in a spiritual experience. I thought it was something Bill Wilson put in books to sell the book. I didn't really realize that you could have a spiritual experience. So I go back through the work with Cliff after I'd been there. It took me 2 weeks, worked back through the work. And man, let me tell you something, guys. I'm calling Chris in the Hill Country every other day going, Chris, guess what we found out last night? And I tell him about this stuff. And he doesn't make fun of me. He just laughs and yeah, that's right. And I remember one day saying, Chris, remember we used to talk about this pink cloud thing? He said, yeah. I said, I think I'm having one of those. I mean, I'm all these years sober, and I'm finally having this experience. Some of these guys are making fun of them. You know, we sit in our meetings and we see these young guys, they get all excited about the big book and they get all excited about recovery and they're doing the deal and they're going to these wind-up joints and they're just so alive. And then some old fart in the back of the room takes cheap shots at them and tell them, well, when they fall off that pink cloud, they're going to really hurt and blah, 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 this kind of stuff. I'm saying, please don't do that. You got a little buckaroo that's all lathered up and he's excited about recovery. Embrace him, help him, do everything you can to help him stay right there. Because let me tell you something, guys, my pink cloud experience has been going on for 12 years now. And I guarantee you every day is an absolute treat to be alive. I absolutely love my life today. We ought to all be stretching for that. We ought to all be trying to do that. Most of you, a lot of you that I've talked to are. That's why it's so cool to be here in this kind of a situation, talking to guys that understand exactly what I'm talking about. That little newsletter that is put together, I'm telling you guys, I almost wept when I look at that thing and saw the 12-step commitments on that stuff. I went to an intergroup meeting in Dallas-Fort Worth about 6 months ago, and I sat there, and they were talking about 12-step commitments. And, buddy, let me tell you something. Out of those 100 or so groups, there's probably 60 of them have reps there. 50 or 60 of them didn't have any 12-step commitments. None. What is this all about? Why do we do this? We're not islands unto ourselves. Let me tell you something. If you drew a sober breath, some of you cats that raised your hand, you drew a sober breath, guess what? Your responsibility to AA has already started. Come on. The brand new guy that walks in there with his head down like this, and you know him right off the bat, he's embarrassed to be here, he's scared spitless, go get him. You don't have to sponsor him right now, but go get him. Make him feel comfortable. Some of you guys are already doing that. I watched you do it tonight. And I want to just bust with pride when I see guys doing what they're supposed to do in this fellowship. Let me read something to you real quick. I'll wind this down, guys. Scout's Honor. Bill Wilson, in a letter in 1966, some of you guys have heard this. Listen to this. It's just three short paragraphs. An AA group, let me clarify this real quick. Bill Wilson in 66 saw the writing on the wall that there were problems in Alcoholics Anonymous in the meetings the way they were set up. By now the discussion meeting had started and they saw what was going on. Clarence Snyder's got a great deal written about this same deck, that stuff. Problem is it's too much. It was too much then and it's too much now. An AA group as such cannot take on all the personal problems of its members, let alone those of non-alcoholics in the world around us. The AA group is not, for example, a mediator of domestic relations, nor does it furnish personal financial aid to anyone. Now, though a member may sometimes be helped by such matters by his friends in AA, the primary responsibility for the solutions of all his problems of living and growing rests squarely upon the individual himself. Now, should an AA group attempt this sort of help, its effectiveness and energies would be hopelessly dissipated. Now, listen to this last little piece. This is why sobriety, freedom from alcohol through the teaching and practice of the AA's 12 steps, is the sole purpose of a group. If we don't stick to this cardinal principle, we shall almost certainly collapse. And if we collapse, we cannot help anyone. Dig? Our sole responsibility. The guy that read the traditions tonight, tradition 5, what does it say? Our primary purpose is to help the alcoholic. It's not anything else. Step 12, what did it say on the deal? Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, what? We tried to carry this message. What message? Our common solution, that we'd had a spiritual experience as a result of the steps. Which leads to the next question. Have you had a spiritual experience as a result of the steps? If you have, super. Get off your rear and go help somebody. If you haven't, get one. Have the experience. For some of you young guys, it's really easy. For some of us old guys, it's really painful to walk up to somebody after you've been sober for some period of time and say, buddy, I'm in trouble here. Have you had a spiritual experience? And the guy goes, uh-huh. Can you help me have my experience? That takes real courage. That takes guts. But let me tell you what the result is. When you're past it, you're past it. You go back through the work. You have the experience. Some of you guys don't believe in the experience. That's okay. But let me tell you something. It's real and it's tangible. 12 years ago, I was kneeling in my garden picking tomato worms off these stupid tomatoes. The sun's going down. And I'm so unhappy. And I'm thinking, you know what? In a few minutes, I'm going to walk back in that house and see that beast of a woman I'm married to. And I'm going to have to deal with those daughters that drive me to distraction. And in the morning, I got to get up and go to that job I just can't stand. Dig? The spiritual malady is consuming me from the inside out, and I'm simply unraveling. Now, I want you to fast forward. Some years after I got to Primary Purpose Group, and they stick the big book right up my you-know-what, and they make me do the things that I didn't want to do, like go carry a 12-step message to a recovery place. Our group today is conducting 30-some-odd meetings a week, other places besides our meetings. That's a lot of buckaroos that are here in the big book that wouldn't have a chance otherwise to hear it. It's good stuff. And I know this group is doing a lot of the same things. But I want you to look at my situation. Fast forward a bunch of years, I'm at this group and I'm doing my stuff here. And I'm kneeling in that same garden in front of those same tomato plants, picking those same nasty worms off the damn thing. Only now there's some importance to what I'm doing, because in a few minutes I get to walk back into that house and see the woman that I absolutely adore. I cannot wait until this is done so I can go home and see that woman. I cannot wait to be in the same room with her. And I cannot wait to walk back in there and have those skinny little girls wrap their arms around my legs and tell me that they love me. I cannot wait to get up at 4:30 in the morning and go down to that lame bindery that we've had for 30 years. I cannot wait for the first call in the morning from one of the guys that I sponsor. I cannot wait for the miracles that I get to see every day because men and women set their ego and their arrogance aside and submitted to a program guaranteed to take them to a new place. I'm begging you guys, don't sell our fellowship short. Don't be afraid to ask questions about your program and others. We are our brother's keeper. We are here to try to help each other along the path. And if you see something in your meeting that's not right, fix it. The big book and the traditions give us a great baseline to judge everything from. We don't have to come from an opinion. We can just come from the baseline that the literature set for us. And as you walk free and clear, and as your life changes in front of you, as you sit there at the end of the day and know that you have a purpose in life, for a room full of guys and gals like us who led fairly pathetic lives before, to know that we have a primary purpose, that we have a reason to live, could there be anything sweeter, guys? Anything? I think not. Guys, thanks a bunch, man. I appreciate it.